Empower Radio presents The Butterfly Moment. It's the classic quantum leap in personal growth. Now here are your hosts for The Butterfly Moment, John Shelter and Carrie Hall on Empower Radio.
Well, good morning. Good morning. My name is John Shelter and welcome to The Butterfly Moment. This is our weekly radio show and it has become my favorite time of the week. My host is
Carrie Hall. Hi, John.
Hi,
everybody. Thanks for joining us.
Carrie and I are life coaches, and if you'd like to contact us concerning either being a guest or a potential client, you should go to butterflycoach.com, and you can get all the contact information concerning our practice and our guests. The Butterfly Moment. The Butterfly Moment is a very important thing to me. It's kind of a description of the potential of change, the potential of a quantum leap. And if you look at and consider a caterpillar being restrained in darkness for a long period of time, there is a moment after a degree of growth and struggle that it has a realization. And that realization is that it is much more than it thought it was, that it is no longer a caterpillar, but it is a butterfly, perhaps one of the most beautiful insects in the world, and best of all, it can fly. In our practice, we look for caterpillar moments and butterfly moments, that moment of transition where that person realizes that they can be more. They realize their full potential, and in their own way, metaphorically, they can fly. Well, today we have part two of an interview with a very, very special person, Dr. Henry Woodworth. And just to refresh, Carrie's going to read some of his background, which is very impressive. Carrie?
Yeah, well, if you're tuning in again, you'll recognize Dr. Henry Woodworth, of course, born on Sigmund Freud's birthday.
So, I love that.
So he may be channeling him during this interview. We're not quite sure. Anyway, Dr. Henry Woodworth is an MD and child and adolescent psychiatrist, graduated from Michigan State University College of Human Medicine, completed 5 years postdoctoral specialization training, including adult psychiatry residency and a fellowship in child and adolescent psychiatry, both at U of M. But we're not going to hold that against them. Being Michigan State fans, that's okay.
Go Spartans. Go Green.
Anyway, Doctor also has a private practice for over 25 years in Northville. He's a medical director at Havenwick Hospital for over 20 years, where he treats teens with severe emotional traumas. So, wow.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot.
Yeah, Doctor, last week, you know, you very appropriately laid a foundation for our listeners, and I would encourage them to go to that first session and get a lot of the basis of what you were talking about, the operation of the brain. And so today we're going to talk a little bit more about some practical things that our listeners can do that can help with the problems of anxiety, that can help with any kind of mental.
Seeing as millions of Americans have some sort of anxiety disorder at some point in their life, and fears a chain reaction that starts with a very stressful stimuli and ends with the release of chemicals that cause our hearts to beat faster, our muscles to tense up, and fear and anxiety are some basic emotions. So,
Doctor, how about giving
us, manage this, Doctor?
Give us some tools for our toolbox.
Well, first of all, I have to say that I'm really depressed now that you've said what I've been doing because it seems like a lot of work. So I'll see a psychiatrist about it. Although then the other joke is that I see a psychiatrist every morning and it doesn't seem to help.
Well, we know.
What, when you look in the mirror?
Yeah. Right.
We know a couple of good life coaches if you want.
Get
you going.
Well, it's good to talk to you again.
Yeah, and thank you for being on the show again. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Doctor.
Thanks for having me. That's great. You know, in quick summary of what we talked about in the last show, and people could listen to that and pick up some more. But basically, the thing that most people aren't aware of is that most of the processing of information that's going on in our lives moment to moment is being done unconsciously, and that's where most of the decision-making is being made. One of the things I wanted to add to last week is anger is fear. So whenever you see anyone angry, whoever it is, and I tell people if they find me angry, they're welcome to, you know, my partner and I, we have an agreement that we'll kind of listen for a moment and then go, okay, so you want to try to figure out what you're afraid of. But let's use the word worry because everyone goes, I'm not afraid. Okay. But the way the brain is processing, as soon as I've got anger showing, it means my brain is going, I'm not sure we know what to do with this situation.
Mm-hmm.
The summary of what we talked about last time was that when that happens, the brain is starting to intentionally break down the processing of the information and leave important things out, which is the fight or flight response. I could go into freeze and then momentarily sort of stop, but then at some point I'm either going to run, which is flight, or go into a conflict, either physically or verbally, and argue and become obnoxious and things like that.
Well, let me ask you a question about anger. There are people who say, don't repress it, it's going to come back up. And there are people who say, well, you got to learn to control yourself. What do you do? What do you do with that energy? You have to admit that it's there, right?
Absolutely. That's why when you catch yourself being angry, or if you have people who are open-minded to this, to these realities, these aren't debatable. They're well established in the brain world. Then what you want to do is, as soon as you recognize it, you want to do something healthy about it. For instance, hitting someone is not a good idea unless you're literally protecting a child or someone from someone bad. But otherwise, you know, or being mean or all that is not very useful. And as we move up the hierarchy of more being more evolved, more developed, it becomes clear there's no real place for that. However, I have a psychologist friend who keeps a pillow and a tennis racket in the closet. And if someone's really angry at their parent or their spouse, he'll say, well, here, let me get this out. And why don't you just beat him to death while I go get a coffee in the other room? And, you know, they'll beat him to death and yell at him. Now, the person's not there. They don't have to know about it. It gets the anger out. And then you go and deal with the fear, which is, what am I afraid of? And the most important thing to know about this is that the clash that occurs between people when they're angry or when someone's angry has a separating effect, whereas going into the fear together with people, since we all have fear, has a bonding effect. So getting past the automatic angry reactions, which, by the way, I think everyone can imagine, they're primitive. These go way back to in the animal world. There's these moments of fighting and all that. But in the more evolved mental world that we are moving toward, it's just not very helpful. In fact, it's very destructive. One thing that I was doing before the show, I was just looking at some information that's very fascinating on the effect of emotion on water. And if people want to look this up online, it's remarkable. The one I was just reading about is called Water's Mysteries, The Mystery of Water, Scientific Proof. But if you just put in water and emotion, this stuff comes up, and it's really remarkable to watch what they're finding is that the water dropped onto a slide by different people has a completely different look. It is somehow reading the energy of the person.
Huh.
And some of them are beautiful molecules and some of them look scary.
Wow.
So, you know, how can I get out of having fear run my life and make dumb decisions? That's what we're going to talk about today.
Yeah, very good. Doctor, I was reading a little bit and it said to overcome fear and anxiety, we need to really work on our subconscious mind, which is something that you had mentioned before. And to work to change our filters that make us prone to these, you know, experiences, these emotions of fear and anxiety. So how do you change your filters?
Well, there's several ways of doing it. The first one is if you keep hanging around people who bring that out in you, you get new people.
Mm-hmm. People
are triggering
hard,
it. Difficult, but really that's... you know, mass hysteria is where more and more people just get really upset or angry has been established for a long time as a scientific fact. And it's still not fully understood. I think that they may find it's more like related to water. There's an energy coming off people that can affect them. I also, though, believe, I think that the water stuff is also showing this, that the opposite of the reactivity is in things like prayer and meditation. Mm. And
Become a relaxation expert, yoga, deep breathing.
Yeah. So now I've decided to line up my energy with people who are having that other energy, and it will affect me. So that would be the first one, is the context you're in, I think, matters a lot. Mm-hmm. Now, everybody has a bad day, but there are groups that are just negative and aggressive and violent. And a lot of the kids in our program have come out of those situations.
Yes.
The most important things we have to do is find them, help them find a way into a different place to be. Sometimes mm-hmm. it's families that the problem exists, and these are teenagers. We have to help them get to different places, knowing that they're going to still interact with their family, but they've got to
right.
get it more isolated off.
Well, so really, you're saying if you could change the physical interaction, the whole thing that you're in that environment, and if you can't change that, you can go inward, you can connect with nature, you can become a relaxation expert, you can train yourself to think positively.
Yep. This was, the Butterfly Foundation, which is working with CHIP. I think you guys must talk about that, right?
Yeah, sure.
That's what saved him when he grew up in a situation of horrific abuse, was his burying himself in literature, positive literature, art. And these are, by the way, these are in the right brain, and the right brain has an overriding effect over the information that is sort of rule-based in the left brain. So if the rule is you're bad and you're going to be abused, the right brain can picture something different and challenge it. So the two hemispheres.
Chip is getting such great results, from artistic exercises, teaching creative writing to these kids, all that kind of stuff. What is this doing for their anger, their mind, the habits that they've gotten into? Why is this allowing them to change?
Well, it would appear to me that the problem, again, which is in the unconscious, is that the more evolved state is not about power and control. So if you look at levels of consciousness, power and control is the lowest one. So if I've been abused, or I'm in a violent situation, or I'm being made fun of or bullied or all those sorts of things that we see, the mind is barring a psychosis. We'll leave that one off for a minute. If, then you got to have psychiatry and medicine step in. But barring that you're literally not processing any of it accurately by perception, then the mind is constantly bouncing back and trying to go to higher consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
So the trouble is, in the unconscious mind, they're fighting. So even though what's been imprinted by the meanness and by growing up in a bad environment, bullying, whatever, there's another part of the mind that is trying to say, well, we can do this. Every time I'm driven into power and control, which will be aggression, reactivity, the fight or flight response, every time I do that, I'm in my lower brain. And my brain is tracking itself, and it's commenting, actually unconsciously going, yeah, that wasn't so good. Even though your perception at the moment was, I had to do that, but the brain is at the same time unconsciously judging you, and it's judging you poorly. So what art and literature do is they help you find an alternative you that is not in the lower level of consciousness of fight or flight, and experience that you and practice that you and find that you inside, where it can finally come out into consciousness more and more. That's why who you hang with does matter, because you don't need at the moment that's happening for that to get cut off. And as you know, when I talked to Lisa, Chip's wife, she played a really incredible role. She had not been through the violence. I call her a positive enabler.
That was so fascinating to me, because I've never heard of that before, and it fits perfectly.
Yep.
The term positive enabler, yeah.
Yeah, the idea that enablers have come to be connected to substance abuse. So these are the people who keep feeding you to help you keep going back to this negative thing. And that's true. That exists. But the positive enabler is outcomes, my artistic or my literary, what I wrote, my creative side, which is going to be more right brain. And someone's going, yeah, that's cool. That's great. And again, if you look at the stuff on water, given that 70% of the body is water, 70% of the earth is water, the idea that they can now see the emotional change within the water, you want to get this activated in every form you can.
Right. Well, you and I both have mentor kids that are in prison right now, and I can't help but think that with a kid that's got this kind of experience or abuse, experiencing those kind of problems, the worst place they can go is in terms of associating in an environment of negativity has to be prison. Wouldn't that be correct?
I would say yes. I can think of a couple of things close, like, but they're their own prisons. You know,
right.
Violent civilizations where they're at war are pretty rough, but even there, you at least have the ability to bounce back and choose.
That being said, I think that we've seen people in prison that kind of create their own little island that they, you know, can immerse themselves in reading and positive thinking to some degree.
Yep. Very much. There's so many cases of this. People say, you know, I was locked in this room, so then I filled my mind with what was in these books that were great books and all. Absolutely. By the way, if it's okay, John, since we haven't had a chance to meet since this came to me, you know, the Butterfly Foundation is building franchises to try to be able to bring some things to help organizations that move this way to escalate their success. And certainly the school system has been one, and now the hospital, my program, is the second one, and I realized we probably should make prisons our third one to have a franchise that we could start helping prisons.
Wow,
that's a great idea.
What a wonderful idea. I never thought of that.
Yeah, and we've got someone in. We've got a couple people in that would probably be jumping on saying, yeah, let me help get these franchises done within the prison.
So this immersion into the creative writing and the yoga and everything that the St. Clair Foundation, Chip and Lisa St. Clair Butterfly Foundation does, it really helps the kids who are at risk in our community to transcend their circumstances?
Yes, and you use the word transcend, and it's a great word because the way the brain is working in consciousness, it's a process that has been talked about as transcend and include. So if I get to go to a higher state of consciousness for a moment and look over and go, wow, that's good, my brain isn't ready to do it repeatedly, but if I go over there a few times, then I'll make a jump. The flip side is that I never get up there or I never get any support within my brain or around me, so I keep going back down into the lower power and control, which doesn't have to be violent. It can be things like repetitive behaviors or addictions, things that I get into which make me feel safer, but they don't represent any actual major improvement. I'm not going into my higher state.
Just thinking of transcendence in prisons, and I'm thinking of Nelson Mandela, you know, transcending his circumstances for many, many years. Gandhi, it seems like... many world leaders.
That's one of the fascinations in the foundation is you can also make a case strangely that bad things, you know, this is the book that, that we came out with, Not All Bad Things. Strangely, the bad things seem to also help us transcend even as a people, as a human race. So I don't really want them on one hand. On the other hand, they can be the very thing I needed to launch me to another level.
Right.
And to help this move human race there.
To this habit of transcendence, this consciousness of transcendence.
Yeah.
Doctor, we've got some time left, and I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about your own creative projects that, in my view, are wonderful tools in getting to kids, in getting them to understand adult concepts. Could you talk a little bit about some of the children's books that you've written?
I can, and I'll do that. I want to make sure maybe we cover one or two or three of the techniques, too.
Oh, good. Absolutely. Do that first.
I'm really bad about time. I have no idea how much time we have.
Got about 6 minutes, so.
Okay. Well, I'll just say, you know, I wrote Need a Leaf, which is a book about a Christmas tree. The little one and a big one get thrown out on New Year's Day, and the little one's trying to figure out why he got thrown out, and he's got all these ideas, and then finally he has an epiphany, and a little miracle occurs. So that one is available. Now, I don't really know how they're available right now, so they could get a hold of anyone who's hearing this who wanted one. I guess they could
get a hold of me. Yeah, I'll get it to you.
Get it to them. But the newer one is Not All Bad Things, which was the story of I had open heart surgery, and it was funny how visualization made this monstrous change for me that I did not even realize was going on. When I found out they were going to lower I had to have open heart surgery because I had a slight aneurysm, very slight, but it's protective because if it rips, you'll die.
Mm.
So it was an intervention that was a good idea. It's a very scary surgery. Most people are freaked out. When I found out that I didn't know that when they do this now, the one I have, they lower your temperature to 65 degrees for 3 hours.
God.
And stop your heart. And the minute they heard that, because there are so many reports of people having out-of-body experiences, I decided in my head, it jumped into my head, that that was really the reason why I was having this open heart surgery. Sure, I need to fix the aneurysm, but that was all there so that I could
have your out-of-body experience.
Exactly.
That's awesome. How was it?
I know. So I was never scared once. It never occurred to me to be afraid. They didn't know what to do in the pre-op room, because they'd come up and talk nice and quietly and try to reassure me, and I'm making jokes and they'd lighten up, and I just assumed I was going to come out of this. And I talked to some of my open-minded friends about Watch For Me and all that. Well, the book is the story, but it's a children's book. It's called Not All Bad Things, and how it turns out is pretty funny.
Great ending. And I got to tell my listeners, if I may, you got to get these books for you or your kids, because they are so wonderful. They're both great stories. Not All Bad Things is got a great surprise ending.
Once again, they're by Dr. Henry Woodworth, and we're talking to Dr. Henry Woodworth as well. So, Doctor, just give us a technique to work with fear. I mean, when I want to talk myself off the ledge, I talk to myself, and I make a mental list of my fears, and sometimes I talk with someone about them, someone who won't judge them. I acknowledge it, I make friends with it, and hopefully I can move on.
Yep, and we talked about that sort of thing in the last session mostly about, I think doing exactly what you're doing is great, and you want to find people that are safe and talk to them, that's great. Here's a few techniques, or I'll at least get one out here. I got to work with one of the top soccer players in Norway, who was from the United States. So he was having trouble. His abilities suddenly went sort of down the tubes, and he suddenly wasn't doing well. So his parents wanted him to talk to me. So we started working on these things. And the first one I gave him was Shake It Off. So there's a researcher who was at the zoo in San Diego who noticed that animals, when they
stop,
they run. Yeah. Did we talk about that one last time?
No, but we have a beautiful golden retriever, and she'll shake it off. And I'll think a lot of times, I want to be like Shelby, and I'm just going to shake this off.
So, yep. So this researcher who noticed that, he started netting animals that were in freeze. So these would be in the zoo. These would be deer, rabbits, things like that, because they'll have this freeze, and then they'll run, and then they'll jump in the air and shake and then run. So he stopped that, and he had to abandon his research, because what happened was every animal he did this to got sick. Again, if you look at the stuff on water, it's very fascinating. There may be an energy, again, that goes along with having been in the fight or flight, particularly the freeze. So what happened to me was that I always wear a helmet, but I didn't this one time coming back from having had a coffee. I didn't have the coffee. I had my cell phone in my hand on my bicycle coming down a hill, and there was traffic, and I flipped the bike. Landed in the road, hurt my shoulder, but the worst part was everybody stopped their cars and rolled with, are you okay? And that would normally bother me. It would normally eat at me. I would see the image over and over again. It's like trauma. So I had just been reading this research, so I went in the house where I was going to. It was only two blocks, the whole thing. And I just stood there and pictured this thing that was bothering me so much and just started shaking my whole body up and down, just arms, legs, everything, for about 30, 40 seconds.
That's great. I think you saved the best for last. I mean, that's very practical.
That's setting a small, achievable goal. I mean, and a great technique.
Yeah. Never bothered me again, and I gave this to the soccer player, and he said this is one of the most useful things.
Well,
that's
I know,
great.
Doctor, you're going to be traveling for a while, and maybe sometime in the spring or summer, would you come back and talk more?
Absolutely.
Thanks, Dr. Henry Woodworth. We appreciate you.
Thank you very much, and you know, have a great rest of the winter, and we'll talk soon, Doctor.
Okay.
And we appreciate our listeners, too, if you want to reach John Shalter or Carrie Hall, empowerradio.com.
Thank you very much. Take care. God bless.